this is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's mostly monthly live chat for the mostly month of September. And I am mostly here tonight. And we're live. As Stu in the live chat says, we have a studio audience here in our live chat text channel. Say hello, live chat text channel, live text chat channel. I like that scene from, I get caught, right? What's the scene? Bruce Almighty? Like, I stumble over words, and then I just kind of get caught in a loop as I'm trying to... It's like a car that gets hung up in something, and then you're just trying to, like, you know, accelerate through it by just... You keep saying words. It's like trying to find the gear. I'm trying to... I just keep saying words until the words come out of my mouth that are actual English learned words. There, I did it again. Which just makes for great reading in the proofread aloud, where I'm purposely trying to find mistakes. So there's a lot of that. And again, I don't know why you people listen to that, but I also don't know why you people listen to this, and I don't know why you people listen to me at all. All right. So how is everybody this September? And oh, also, happy first day of autumn, or autumnal equinox, as we call it. Okay. And people are answering in the live chat. Like, that was a rhetorical question. I'm not watching. Though, as always, I will be taking comments and questions at the end. And if you want to leave any comments or questions, use the big red exclamation point and the big red question mark emojis. And Renish points out, clearly you are, since you commented on our comments. Obviously, I am watching the comments, even though I'm not. And Renish, nobody likes a smartass. That's Angry's pro tip from me to you. Okay, so let's start with the news, because I actually have a bullet. I have a list. I didn't draw little bullets, but it is on a piece of fancy paper. So let me run through these topics and show notes. Insofar as scribbled comments on the back of a Starbucks napkin counts as... it's a fancy piece of paper. I copied them onto a fancy piece of paper from the Starbucks napkin. Arthur said, I like that it sounded like you pulled it out of your pocket and unfurled it. That was actually me crumpling up the previous show notes and throwing them out. And I'm trying to decide whether or not to actually address the complete existential meltdown that was the angry article discussion today, or just leave that one alone. Though I probably do have to reassure everybody that I am okay and not going anywhere. The existential crisis was not whether or not I should continue to exist, but how I'm going to continue to exist, and only as it pertains to my being an online content creator and not in any personal real life way. But anyway, so the schedule for September is a mess. I put out a schedule. I revised the schedule. The articles on it have been changing repeatedly. That will not stop. By next Friday, which is September 30th, there will have been two more articles released for early access, because there has been two already. I do not know what they will be. I had a major blowout on the article I was writing this morning, which was rather funny in itself. I sat down and started writing I was writing the article on blessings and curses. And I started writing the long rambling introduction, which sometimes I start before I write and sometimes I don't. Before I write the article, I do the long rambling introduction, or I don't, depends. Sometimes I forget to do it altogether. Sometimes I do it after the fact, and sometimes I have to rewrite it two or three times after I have finished the article. But nonetheless, I started writing the long rambling introduction that was going to lead into a nice fun article about, here's a fun system for blessings and boons and curses and shit, and how it can tie into my awesome tension pool with, by the way, a secret revelation of my personal generic complication table, which I use to build actual complication tables at my game, or which I would if I actually ever got around to sitting around and doing that instead of just pulling complications out of my ass. Though I did make a generic one that now allows me to pull complications out of my ass by rolling them on a table. So yeah, there was that. And then an hour later, I had 1,800 to 2,000 words, I don't remember the actual word count, of garbled rant that struggled to introduce three different articles and basically just broke down into running D&D using any sort of a system is terrible and you're better off just pulling, you know, just making shit up as you go. And that's what I do. And that's when I stopped and realized that I had blown a tire in the article mobile, pulled over to the side of the road. And then, because this is the way I handle all stress in my life, I panicked and cried. And then I went on the internet and panicked and cried to the Angry Article discussion channel. But there's been sort of an ongoing, I will circle back to this. There's been sort of an ongoing issue with Town Mode, which speaks to a bigger issue, which speaks to a biggest issue. Anyway, so nonetheless, there are two more articles coming into whatchamacallits. Early access. One will probably hit around Tuesday. One will hit around Thursday. I don't know what they'll be. They will be something, and they will be good, and one of them will likely be best blessings and curses, because I'm pretty happy with the system that I clutch together based on the thing I improvise at my table. Sort of. Based on the thing I will be improvising at my table more now that I improvised it the first time, except I didn't actually improvise it that much. But that's a whole other story, too. But anyway, moving on. The non-convention. We are about 3 weeks, we are about 3 weeks away from the Angry Non-Convention 2022 in beautiful Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. And a number of you have volunteered to run games, of which I am greatly appreciative. I am sitting down and throwing together, trying to work out a schedule and make sure we have a balance of enough players and enough people who want to run things with an allowance for people to do pickup games. And we're going to have board games and shit. It's going to be a blast, but I just need to sit and organize that. And that's on the docket for tomorrow. And then I will be updating everyone and then we'll figure things out from there. I might actually be inviting. Initially, I said to people, you can only run one game. Because I didn't want, 10 tables of GMs and no actual players circulating around to play at any of the tables. So I had to be careful, but, it looks like the numbers aren't changing. I've had a couple of people drop out. I've had a couple of things shift. Meanwhile, I've been trying to decide what the hell to do with my, what I'm going to run there. Because what I'm planning to do is, and I've broken the entire non-con down into six time blocks or six sessions during which games can be run and events can be scheduled. And it is my intention to be running something at a table for all six of them. Okay, I'm going to skip ahead to an emergency Q&A because Queasel has desperately asked for help and is about to disappear to run a game and doesn't have a superlative description script. Right? Any chance we'll get the superlative description script before my next session, the one that I'll be leaving the chat to run in 15 minutes? Well, apart from the fact that I am offended that you scheduled your game the same night as my live chat, here is the breakdown. Basically, it is a 5-point script, And the idea is that people should be able to hit each of the points in one or two sentences. So the first sentence or two is where you introduce your character's race, gender, ethnicity, build, and apparent age. Okay, so for example, Malia is a tall, slender human woman. She has the brown hair and light skin of a Westerner and looks to be in her 20s. Next, in a sentence or two, you hit your character's visible equipment and clothing, starting with arms and armor and not leaving anything out. Then you describe the quality and kind of visible clothing if it's not armor. You don't want it to hit everything, like, oh, wearing pants and a blouse and whatever. Okay, so for example, Malia wears plain traveler's clothes beneath hide armor. She carries a quarterstaff and has a few daggers tucked into her belt. Over her cloak, she has a heavily laden traveling backpack. Next, in a sentence or two, any symbols or adornments your character might be wearing with the meaning or context insofar as they would be known to the players. Malia has a wooden medallion marked with the twins symbol. They are the prophets. They are prophets of the Vassar. Or in this case, here's a dwarf example. Tordic's braided hair is clasped with numerous rings that probably describe his caste and station to other dwarves. Then, in a sentence or two, throw a unique fact or personality signifier in there. Something that, other than all the mechanical crap, kind of identifies your character as, you know, that one unique feature that stands out about your character. And if you really want to be an advanced student, you might want to work this into a previous appropriate sentence. So like if you want to talk, like Malia has bright green eyes that shine with curiosity, which is something I could actually move back to the first sentence because I mentioned eye and hair color, or whatever, or Tordek's craggy face is almost always scowling, something like that. And then finally, this is where someone, you know, a player would work in that one unique fact or that the rest of the party learned last time. I don't know if I talked about that in the article. I think I did, but that's where the player says, hey, here's one thing you learned about my character, their abilities, background, personality, anything at all. As long as it came out in play, they can mention it. So last time you learned that Malia is a divine spellcaster when she casts the Bless spell. Or it turns out Tordek hates goblins. And there you go. That is the basics of the script. There is more to it because there's a bunch of advice around it. Plus, as a GM, you've got to extend it, take it away, take pieces off, because you don't want to spend an entire paragraph describing a shopkeeper. You need to be able to say, okay, I just need the first line and maybe one unique thing. And maybe I can work the unique thing into just the first line. So that as a GM, you can adjust the size of the description. And of course, you can start to play with the script in the order that you present things in. But basically, you want to start with gross physical features, then go with equipment, arms and armor first, because that's the things people notice most. Then any clothing underneath it, focusing on qualitative descriptors rather than numbers and specifics and mechanics or anything like that. And then, you know, symbols, adornments, and then unique feature. There you go. Okay, that's it. Now, where was I in the script? Oh yeah, non-convention, still coming along, trying to decide what the hell I want to do there with the six sessions that I have. Yeah, Queasel, don't you ever say I don't love you. In a totally platonic, non-threatening, don't sue me kind of a way. Anyway, trying to decide what to do at the non-convention, because I know I want to be able to sit down and run and play games with people. I want the chance to introduce people, and I know a lot of people want the chance to play at my table. And I know some people, you know, like me, I want to let my hair down a little bit. I want to run some fun, silly, low-pressure stuff. Though I know some people are going to want, like, actual, a serious RPG run by Angry, as best as I can do that. And then, of course, you know, actually trying to run six role-playing game sessions is going to be a bit of a beast. So there's a couple of board games I'd like to bring and just, you know, play with with a group of people. So I'll have my six sessions basically broken down like this. I'm thinking I'm going to devote one or two sessions to board games. I am going to run the same Dungeons & Dragons adventure twice for two different tables, and that will be more of a serious thing. I'm going to run a session of Kobolds Ate My Baby, a delightful role-playing game. And then for my one weird thing, I am going to run a session of the Everway role-playing game, which was a role-playing game designed by Jonathan Tweet and released by Wizards of the Coast in 1991? Before they bought D&D, by the way. 1998. It was well after Magic. 98, 99. It was a couple of years before they bought Dungeons & Dragons, when they were just trying to break into role-playing games themselves. And it is a tarot-based role-playing game. It is unique. So I will be running that. Wiley is asking, would you be willing to film one of the serious sessions that you run at the non-con? I will not be able to do that. It is not feasible. I won't have the means or equipment there. I'm sorry. I know people want to see me run a game. I am working on how I could at least stream or record and release an online game, or perhaps even a real life game. But that's going to be a couple of months before I can work that into the schedule. But it is on the schedule. Enough people have now demanded that they see me run games. Granted, as soon as you see me run a game, it's going to ruin everything. Because you're going to stop. You're going to wonder why you take my advice. Because clearly, I am not the GM that I'm trying to turn all of you into. Which has been my biggest fear about actually running games publicly, is that it's imposter syndrome, right? It's like, it's not even this. I'm not a bad GM. I don't think I am. Running online, I really struggle with. I still struggle with it on a weekly basis. It just does not come naturally to me, and I have been having a hard time making the adjustments I need to make for the medium. And things have actually been, I have been struggling more lately. But here's the thing. I don't think I'm a terrible GM. The problem is I am now going to be compared to the image that people have imagined of me running a game based on all my advice, which I am terrible at taking. And there's a whole, like the whole rant that fell apart today was basically how I don't use most of the rules that even I write, let alone most of the rules of the game. I use 8%, I use like what, 10 or 20% of the rule book. And the rest, I just don't even bother with, okay? And if it's D&D 5e, it's down to like 5%. I use 5% of the rules in 5e. When I'm running 3.5, I'm using about 25% of that rule book, maybe. Okay? But anyway, yes, people want to see me run a game. I'm working out how I can do that. To that end, this moves me nicely to the next little piece of news. Next weekend, Tiny is abandoning me for 3 days. And so I had been talking about doing a sort of live stream reaction or analysis of the D&D One crap that had come out. And I think that Friday, the September 30th, would be an excellent night for me to try to do that. And so I am going to. And I will record it and I will post it elsewhen for those who cannot be there live. But And I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm just going to run through the videos that they did or I'm going to read stuff in advance. I haven't decided yet. I'll figure out the format. But pursuant to that, it has been roughly a couple of years since I actually tried to stream anything with cameras. And if I do a reaction video, then, you know, I've got the video playing in one window and my face in another one. So I am probably going to try and do sometime next week, and I will have a better answer for this tomorrow, but one evening next week, I'm thinking Wednesday the 28th, a simple test stream where I might hang out and show off, for totally other reasons, which I will talk about in the stream, show off an old point-and-click adventure game that was released on the NES, though it was originally released on Macintosh computers, Shadowgate, which plays into one of the things I was thinking about doing at the non-con, which I may or may not still do. But anyway, I will announce all of that, but I just want to make sure that I can get equipment and get OBS working with Discord and get a good solid recording before I try to do the big recording on Friday night. Because, you know, as those of you who were here for the pre-show know, everything always goes wrong when I touch it. I went through 3 microphones tonight. So, so that's it. Big stream, little stream. Okay, more news. Hey, producer, where am I on time? I haven't been keeping track. Am I at like 20 minutes in? 40 minutes left? Yes, ish. Okay. All right. Let me address the elephant on the battlefield here that is town mode and what the hell is going on with it, because I've been making ominous statements about it in long rambling introductions and so forth. And now people are speculating that it is dead or that it has fallen apart or it is going the way of Mega Dungeon or at least AngryCraft. And it's not doing any of that. Okay. Town mode is not being abandoned. However, town mode cannot be finished the way I started it. Because I discovered, and this was actually a discovery that I made while looking at my own table and realizing that I don't run things nearly by the rules as I think I did. One of the most important aspects of town mode is making the shit in town matter, right? So it's like when you want the players to go, oh, you have to maintain your equipment or it'll fall apart, or you need to get training. And if you get certain kinds of training, that will provide benefits. And oh, if you earn the favor of certain NPCs, then you can have beneficial there's benefits to being friends with NPCs. And if you if you engage with different locations, you'll be able to get this or get that. And sometimes your supplies will spoil and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, I will give an example of supply spoilage just so that you understand exactly how this issue, why this issue is coming up. Okay. So, ostensibly at my game table, I use complication tables to determine when stuff happens. And I just use the complication table as a prompt. So the other night, Tuesday night, my players were in a little town, a little thorp, basically, a little farming market, right? So they had traveled away from the city. There's a bunch of farms. And at the heart of the farms is a little market square and, you know, like half a dozen buildings, like a butcher, a baker, an inn, a candlestick maker, whatever. Okay, and as a result of the complication table, I discovered their supplies had to spoil. They had to lose some supplies. Okay, now, I do not on my table write something like 1d6 days worth of food goes bad or anything like that. Instead, I just write supplies spoil, and I know what that means is I have to get some useful temporary supply of the parties out of their hands. I have to destroy it. The party is traveling with an apothecary, a mediciner, who, unbeknownst to the party, who brought medical supplies. She has some potions on her. She has some anti-venom. She has a few other things that she thought would be useful on the party's adventure. It's an escort quest. So she brought this stuff along. She also has a pet Arctic fox, which has already been shown to be mischievous. So in order to destroy the supplies, I decided her fox had chewed up, had killed one of the grumpy farmer's geese, one of his laying geese. And the farmer was mad, she got caught, and now the local authorities were shaking her down for money. And I'm using the old Germanic tradition that if you destroy someone's property, you have to pay back three times its worth in fines. You know, there's a whole set of old Germanic laws about how you settle conflicts and even injury and murder and things like that. There's a whole concept of the Wehrgeld, and it fits very nicely into my setting. But anyway, the point is, she was now being shaken down for three times the price of this goose. And when the party came looking for her, they interrupted the shakedown, of course. Of course, she doesn't have the money in her pocket. But what she does have is the medicine that the party would use. So she is offering now to offload the medicine. One of the party members offered to pay the fine on her behalf or buy the medicine. And also the local authority figure said, look, I just want this to go peacefully and I will happily take the medicine. The farmer didn't want the medicine. And she said, I'll take the medicine. I'll buy it from you. And then you can use the money to cover the fine. And then it's just between us. So it was all this big thing. And ultimately it came down to one of the players. Do you want to give up 15 gold pieces, or do you want to give up one of an unknown number of doses of antitoxin that might be useful if you run into poisoned creatures later? And that is how I removed supplies from the party. Okay, that is my version of supplies spoiled. Okay. And it's basically just a matter of sitting there and looking at everything that's going on at the table. These are all the pieces I have to play with. Somehow, some way, I have to use all these little pieces to destroy some of the party's supplies, some of their consumables, right? Oh, they're definitely, yeah, there will definitely not be poison creatures later. Like 2 minutes later, the party was attacked by giant spiders, by the by. Stu said, narrator, there were poison creatures later. But anyway, well, of course, I mean, the reason she had, like, it was like, that's how you put an NPC in the party, right? Because otherwise she was, they thought they took the useless NPC, but that's a whole separate thing. Because there was an NPC who had magical healing, and then there was the NPC who was basically her gardener slash, or his gardener slash assistant. And there was an argument between the two of them as to who should actually go on the mission. And they made the right choice from a story perspective, but they decided to take the useless gardener. So I'm like, okay, well, the useless gardener at least knows how to equip herself to travel through the wilderness. And she gathered up a bunch of supplies from the medical shop. So all of a sudden, the first time the party got poisoned by one of the frostbite spiders, she was going to be like, oh, I have the medicine. Don't worry. Whoop. And now you have avoided, you know, 1d6 points of dexterity damage or whatever the hell it is. Okay, but that's basically it, right? I know all the pieces that are in play, and somehow, some way, I have to use all of those pieces to destroy a consumable item that the party has, and have to do so in a way, if I can, that gives the party some kind of choice. Like, they can't avoid costing themselves something. But I did let them, I manufactured a situation where they would at least get to choose, is it the money or is it the medicine? You know, what do you want to lose? Okay. The whole point of all, like, the point I started making with this whole thing is the idea that town has to matter, right? And so, like, if D&D does not have supply rules to begin with, right? The only supply in D&D is what? Like, is rations. Rations are so cheap and encumbrance is so forgiving by fifth edition that, you know, it's really sort of meaningless. And there you go. So in order for me to build town mode, suddenly I also have to tell people how to make stuff matter. And I've been looking at the ways that I do that at my own table, particularly with my online, particularly with the two games I'm running now. How do I make stuff matter? And you know, and then how do I finagle the complications into the game? And I realized 5e doesn't have any of the hooks I hang stuff off. It really doesn't have any hooks at all. And I know I've said this before. This is not news about 5e or really any edition of D&D. Okay, you only have so many hooks to hang things off of. And the game doesn't make things like equipment upgrading and equipment breakage a thing. Equipment breakage, by the way, is similar to supply spoilage. Okay, I have an entry on my complication table and it starts out as the rarest entry. That is, equipment broke. Okay, and somehow, some way, if that comes up, I have to break a piece of equipment. Okay, and again, you know, it could be as simple as in battle, if somebody rolls a one in a fight, then I'm right there. It's like, yeah, there you go. You just broke your sword off or something. But, you know, and you're just waiting for the opportunity. But it doesn't matter how you do it. The point is that you've got to find a way to do it. And by the way, there is a concept I use on the complication table called creeping doom, where I really should explain this stuff to my players because I haven't told them much enough about what I do in the background. But then again, I'm half-assing it anyway. Like, I do technically have a complication table and I do technically roll on it. And I use it as a guide for my bullshit. But the concept behind creeping doom is every day that you adventure, certain things move up to the more common entries on the table because it's a bell curve table. So, you know, if you go adventuring for 10 days, you are much more by the end of those 10 days, equipment spoilage or equipment breakage, supply spoilage are, those are the things that are most likely to happen if you're out too long, you know. But anyway, if you're waiting for the opportunity, Stu is asking, if you're waiting for the opportunity, how do you show the players it's connected to the pool? Like, it doesn't always have to be connected to the pool. Like, the connection doesn't always have to be obvious. Okay, especially once the players know what you're doing. My players now, I assume my players, pretty much know that when something comes out of the blue and just kicks them in the teeth, it's because complications. Okay, and some of it just makes logical sense. The longer you're adventuring, the more likely your supplies are to go bad and your equipment breaks. Okay, so that is just an effect of the timing. When you're walking through the woods and suddenly something leaps out and attacks you, and then I won't give you any experience points for beating it, and it wasn't carrying any treasure, then you're like, oh, that's what that complication roll was like an hour ago. That was that spider, you know? And honestly, you know, what matters is that the players know that you're using the tension pool, and that it will complicate their lives. And then it's up to them to decide how many of those complications were you purposely, intentionally planning to screw them, and how many of them were the dice screwed them. Because it shouldn't look this, it, you know, like, really the players shouldn't look too far behind the curtain. They should know that the tension pool has an impact and that complications make their lives harder. But adventuring is already hard, and hard things happen all the time. Can they distinguish between the stuff that specifically happens and because they were being reckless or pushing too far, and the stuff that doesn't? Sometimes they can. Sometimes they can't. Sometimes they give me a golden opportunity where you know, like, they'll smash down a door and make a lot of noise, or they'll have a loud argument, or they'll ignore an imminently dangerous situation. And then those are the opportunities where I override the table and just say, I don't care what the complication table says. The complication is you couldn't shut up and make a decision, and now the Umber Hulk, you know? So anyway, I'm getting off the topic because this isn't really about the tension pool. But it is about the tension pool, because the tension pool is like my premier tool for making shit matter, especially when it comes to the passage of time. I just wish I was more consistent with using it and showing it to my players and doing all the things I said were important to do. Then again, I really don't. Because one of the things you discover after you run a lot of games is that actually all the stuff that matters also doesn't matter. Okay? So look, real talk. It is important for players to see the tension pool and know the tension pool exists enough of the time that they know it exists, or at least that they'll assume it's operating in the background. Okay? Do they have to see every die that gets rolled every time? Do they even have to actually see the pool? No. As long as you have some way of them, as long as they know it's there, and you don't ever let them forget it, it's doing its job, okay? So, no, I no longer have it in full view of my players, though that's more because of laziness and inconsistency and just being bad at stuff. But also, it works just fine if I don't. It's better if it is visible, but, you know, I'm babbling now, and I need to stop babbling because I do need to move through this. So here is the point with town mode. In order for me to hand you town mode, I also need to be able to hand you a couple of other minor rules hack systems that make the stuff in town mode matter. And I have to do that first, okay? Like, until I tell you how to handle equipment breaking down or supplies spoiling, I can't give you town mode, okay? Because it just, town mode won't matter. No one will care, okay? But that also means that I have to find a way to translate the stuff I do at the table on the fly into something a little more systematic that people can use. And then my hope in doing that, because I do that a lot, my hope is that at some point, like, I go around riding unicycles and doing tricks because I'm just done with rules, okay? But I know people need bicycles with training wheels until they get comfortable enough. So I look at the tricks that I do on my unicycle, and then I say, okay, how can I build a bicycle with training wheels that any person could jump on and at least ride? And my hope is, as you are riding it one day, the training wheels will break off and you will end up careening down a hill, and you'll keep your balance anyway and discover you didn't need the training wheels to begin with. That is my fervent hope. When I gave out the companion system and I wrote this whole thing about, like, personality traits and, you know, here's quirks and here's reputation and here's stuff. Okay, that's all stuff I keep on scratch paper and in my head. I know what the NPCs in my world think of the players, and the NPCs in my world react to the way the players treat them. Okay, It's usually tick marks or a simple number, but you know, it's there. There's something there. I always know. In some cases, if the NPC is stuck in my head enough, then it's just in my head. Okay, which is also why I fall apart if I can't run a game more than. I used to end a campaign if we missed more than three sessions in a row, because I rely so much on memory and momentum. And lately, I have been the biggest obstacle to me running regular games. But that's a whole other aside. But anyway, the point is, I gave you all of that hoping that you'd create a few NPCs that way. And then you discover that making NPCs that way is... it works, and it's a lot of fun, and it gives you lively NPCs, but the actual making of all the NPCs that way is kind of boring. So I was hoping you'd kind of get lazy and start half-assing it, and then realize you don't actually need the systematic approach. You just need to spend a few minutes thinking about, you know, how does the NPC, what does the NPC bring to the party? And what does the NPC think of the party, and how can I keep track of that? Okay. Ananda's fox that I mentioned earlier, the apothecary, the gardener's fox that I mentioned before. She's a perfect example of something that if I was writing this stuff up with my own rules, that would be a personality quirk, because the fox keeps getting the party into trouble. Okay. And realistic, at some point, if Ananda starts to feel confident enough and comfortable enough with the party, she will keep a better control on the fox, and it will become useful. Okay? Whereas if the party keeps mistreating her and pissing her off, then because she's now stressed being with the party and not getting along with it, she's not keeping her fox on a leash, and it's just going to keep causing more problems. That's just naturally what'll happen. It's the same thing I told you to do systematically. I just do it on the fly. And so really the NPC system was me sitting down and saying, okay, how can I turn what I mostly do on the fly into a system people can use, and then that I can publish. So in my game world, there are all sorts of ways that curious players can poke and prod and interact with the world and just earn minor bonuses that last throughout adventures. Like, for example, getting a priest to bless their trip, you know, or appeasing the spirits of a particular region when you arrive in the region, right? Those things can give you just these little boons. And I throw them together half on the fly. It's like, oh, you pleased the spirit, he who swims against the current, the salmon spirit. And so now you will enjoy a bonus on swim checks until the adventure is over or I decide that it or until I decide that it's expired. I got thrown off because the red question mark came up, and what I should really do is ask people, hey, with the questions and the comments, wait until I get to the Q&A portion, but I realize I'm also chewing up the Q&A portion because I won't shut up. Which means I'm probably going to ask the producer to give me more time in just a moment. And I really have made my point at this point. And yes, Wiley, I will drop a picture of the generic complication table such as it is right now. I think I can do that. And not immediately, but I will do it before the end of the chat. And then, it will also appear in the Blessings and Curses articles. Okay. Rob is asking, could we get a thread for Q&A so we can ask questions and Angry can't see till he needs? I guess that's a good use of thread functionality, but I've never used thread functionality. So, no, it's cool. Because I also like to comment on the things people are commenting on in the chat. So, yeah, I'm not, that's unnecessary. But what I am going to do is do this. Mr. Producer, are you there? Okay. Do you have time to hang out, or should I just, or do you need to get off the clock and then I can just be my own producer? All good. Okay. From this point forward, give me 30 minutes for Q&A, and I'm going to start Q&A right now. Yeah, Procillus is awesome. Neither do I, Procillus. Neither do I. He's saying, I have no life. Neither do I. I know you are attending the non-con, and we have. I will certainly buy you a drink for all of your efforts. I owe you at least that much. I owe you for a lot more than that, but that's personal, and I won't say that in front of anyone else. So nobody needs to know. Actually, you know what? That's silly. There are a number of people who have been, like, everybody in this community has been super supportive and tolerant and patient and understanding and sympathetic of me over the past 2 months as I've been going through some very difficult personal times. And they're not as difficult as lots of people have them, so I don't like to make a big deal about it. But at the same time, they have been happening nonetheless. There have been a few people who have reached out to me privately and been exceptionally supportive and concerned for me. I don't want to mention all of their names. Procillus has been a valuable friend to me through this entire time, and I really appreciate that. Any of the players in my two gaming groups who are listening to this, I know that this has been very difficult on our game, and I know through it all, the only thing you actually cared about was that I was taking care of myself and doing well. So I am tremendously grateful for that. And, I have come back with a renewed vigor for my games, and I'm having such fun running in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks that we've been maintaining things a little bit more consistently. And I look forward to keeping it going and building that momentum. So I appreciate that. I appreciate there was another member of the community who reached out to me just today. We had a rather extensive conversation about my struggles, which I appreciated tremendously. So you are thanked, but I won't embarrass you by saying your name without your permission. So, but thank you to everyone who has reached out to me, but especially those people, and also the entire mod squad, the Enforcer squad, because as I have been sporadic in my appearances in the Discord, they have had their eye on everything, and I really appreciate that. I am lucky beyond words to have this community. And that's all, because I'm going to get emotional. And also now I'm chewing up my extra 30 minutes. So somebody start typing a question so that I can start doing the damn Q&A. And meanwhile, I'm going to grab a screenshot of it. It's not going to be the prettiest thing in the world, but I'll give you a screenshot of it such as it is now, and understand that it will appear with some explanations in a very near future article. 30 minutes from now, whatever. Whenever you tell me I'm done, you know, producer's choice. But there, meanwhile, there is a screen capture of what passes for my generic complication table. Okay, the things with stars, since nobody has typed a question yet, the things with stars, by the way, are the things I described as creeping doom. So each day or each period, depending on the granularity with which I'm tracking time, that expires, those things bump their way up the table toward number 11. Until they fill out the common and mild stuff. Okay. Scales of equilibrium. Starting Starting Rolling Gold in 5e over starting equipment for classes. Yay or nay? I saw this conversation and didn't have time to remark on it, and then I couldn't remember which channel it was on. And I really wanted to jump in and say, okay, here's the thing. If you give players starting equipment, and if you let players buy starting packages like scholars kits and all that shit, your players will mostly forget what equipment they have and they will never think twice about it. Okay, if the players have to buy each individual piece of equipment, they'll know what they've got. Okay, so in general, I would much rather prefer the players to buy equipment. However, that also runs the risk that players will do foolish things, like for some reason not bringing food on wilderness adventures. So, and the other thing is that, yeah, Arthur is saying that would be foolish. Yeah, I know it would be. You said they would make they only make that mistake once. You would think that. You would think that, but I have some evidence to the contrary, my friend. No, but seriously, the opposite side of that is that rolling gold and then picking out bits and pieces of equipment does drag out. Does drag out the whole process. It's kind of a pain in the ass. So, you know, me personally, I usually just hand people equipment. Well, okay, actually, here's my compromise, right? This is going to sound, because I realized I actually do compromise between the two. So I should have actually thought about it for a second and think, okay, here's what I do. I equip the players with equipment, armor, weapons, clothing, and some very, very big class tools and some basic supplies. And then I let them have money and start them in a town or in another location where they haven't needed to buy supplies yet, so that the first time they actually leave town to go on an adventure is when they have to think about what other crap to bring. So I do both. And isn't that interesting? You know, it's like, I mean, most, like, you know, you want a weapon? Okay, have a weapon. Like, it's not, every fighter's going to buy armor. Every fighter's going to buy a melee weapon and a ranged weapon. Every rogue is going to have thieves' tools and a finesse weapon. Every wizard is going to have a weapon they'll never use and a spell book and an arcane focus, right? That shit you could just give people, okay? But as for the contents of the backpack, make them buy that, but make it part of the game, you know? Okay, that's my solution. Wiley, what is the best way to improve narration skill other than running games and reflecting on running games? You could, you could get a job as a narrator. Like, I don't know what to tell you. What's the best way to improve a skill other than practicing the skill? So what's the second best way to improve the skill? I don't know. All right, actually, I do know. Once again, my urge to be snark overrode me stopping to think about the question for 2 minutes and realizing there is actually an answer. Here is something I do that makes people think I'm crazy. I practice narration outside of the game. If I am in the car alone, I will practice narrating. Most often what I'm actually doing is I'm playing NPCs. Like, I will have conversations when I'm driving in the car to the store. Suddenly I will be like, oh, tonight, the party's going to meet that captain of the ship. And he's an interesting character. And how's that going to play out? He's going to, oh, welcome aboard my ship. And, you know, whatever, you know, and then all of a sudden I'll find myself playing out the conversation. So yeah. You know, the other thing to do is, like, I'm realizing this is sort of a recent revelation that you can't improve narration until you work on visualization also. That said, narration, like, you, apart from the speaking skill of being able to speak words, there is actually nothing wrong with sitting down with a blank piece of paper and just writing writing flavor text. That will improve your narration skill, at least in terms of delivering description. In terms of pacing and stuff, run a club, manage a group, teach people board games, anything that requires you to just manage a group and keep things moving. You know, unfortunately, if you're looking for better description skill, then you can do that with a piece of paper and a pen and just practice describing shit. If you're looking for pacing and maintaining focus and things like that, you can't do it without other people. So you've got to find some other way where you have to be responsible for keeping people paying attention and doing things. So, you know, if you can't get a good gaming group together, run a board game night and teach people a different board game every week. And then try to keep them actually playing the board game. You know, if you really want to get good at it, if you want to get good at the pacing thing, schedule a board game night and schedule exactly as much time as the game lies on the box and says the game takes to play, and then get the whole game done in that time. All right. Coltergeist. How much do you focus on adventures tailored toward the character's internal personal goals? Examples, people in the past showing up, introducing specific challenges that might piss off an excitable character, etc. I've kind of shied away for, like, I really have moved toward the zeros to heroes, humble beginnings, blank slate characters more and more, which means there's a lot less of that to play with. But as I do figure out the character's personal motivations, yeah, I do work, like, personal motivations you should always be paying attention to. They're the reasons why people will take on an adventure, you know, and if you're not speaking to at least two or three of the player's motivations with every adventure, then you're not actually going to, then the group's not going to want to take on the adventure. They might take it on anyway because the players know that if they don't accept the adventure, then there is no game, even though that shouldn't be the way it is. But, you know, you should at least know them. Why is the first best method of character generation the best? Because all of the other ones are not as good. Scales of equilibrium as the game lies on the box. Yes, the time, every board game claims a certain amount of time to play the game, and every board game lies about it. Coltergeist, read stuff out loud. No, reading stuff out loud does not actually help with narration or description. Okay, this is an interesting thing. When you are reading out loud, you are passing words through your mouth without engaging most of your brain. Most people who read aloud remember a lot less of what they read out loud than people who read and then have to reiterate or summarize it. Okay? So, no, reading out loud won't help with your narration. It will help with your delivery skills. If you are concerned with improving your voice, delivery, pronunciation, clarity, enunciation, all that crap, reading stuff out loud is a good way to practice it. But reading stuff out loud does not engage your brain the way creating words in your head and then communicating them does. Okay. Stu. That was mean, Proselus. For proof that you don't engage your brain while reading out loud, listen to a proofread aloud. No, but it really is a completely different skill. Your reading comprehension goes down immensely when you are reading out loud. Okay, it works differently in your brain. Stu. I'm aware this is probably a stressor, but how are the theme packs going? Is it something you may have been too ambitious with? It is possible that I was too ambitious with it. I am still holding out hope. I am still working on them. I think actually, the bigger stressor was the non-convention. That kind of threw everything for a loop. This is the thing. I want to give out as many theme packs as I can before the end of the year. And I kind of have them all planned out, and some of them are already outlined, and some of them have started being designed, and I need to focus and actually write the text for them. But I also want to deliver something at the end of the year or early next year that makes up for the fact that the theme packs weren't delivered to the people I promised them when they were promised, and maybe not as many. Like maybe a module or something. Not a module like Fall of Silverpine Watch, but some kind of adventure module or something that I can put together. So really, the thing is, I am aware that it is a seriously broken promise to people who have supported me a lot. And so something needs to be done to balance that out. And I owe that much. So I've been workshopping ideas and trying to figure it out. But so. All right, more questions, comments? Stu is asking, is there anything we can do to help? Not really. It's a lot of it's just on me now. Stop letting me off the hook. I mean, I hate to say that. People are very understanding, but there's a certain point where people are too understanding, and then you don't feel the pressure of disappointing people, which is actually, it's shame. Shame is a very important social force. It's unpleasant. People don't like it. But it is actually vital to making people be good people. You know, like I am ashamed of myself because I made promises I didn't keep. So yeah. But no, like apart from that, and I don't mean that literally. Like I don't want everybody to turn around and just be mean to me, because nobody wants that either. But realistically, this is stuff I got to sort out for myself. And there's everything you are already doing is stuff to help me. Like you help, everybody here helps me immensely. Some of it's just through support. Some of it's through friendship. Some of it's just because you read my stuff and you care about it. Some of it's just because you care about me. Yeah, I'm not lying when I say I'm really, really lucky. And I want to be worthy of what I am given. So I have to, you know, I have to step up and be worthy of it. And, you know, do I suffer from too much ambition sometimes? Yeah, I really do. It's been a constant problem. But I'm also, as I was discussing in the angry article discussion thing today, I've also discovered that my problem isn't necessarily over ambition, but it is actually how I pursue the things that I pursue. The workflow and the way I work and the things I choose to work on is not conducive to what I actually want to produce. And what I actually, and also there is the question of, do I want to produce the things I think I want to produce, or do I want to produce the things that I am producing now? Like, which way do I want to go? It's all internal stuff. Yeah, estimating timelines is awful. But the thing is, like, I do know how much work I can get done when I'm on and when I'm focused and when I'm not distracted. I never allow for disaster, which is foolish. Like, I never allow, every once in a while, I will write somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 words that need to be flushed down the toilet. Okay? About once a month, about twice every 3 months, I will get through most of an article and then have to destroy it and say, that didn't work. Sometimes I realize it early. Sometimes I catch myself. Sometimes I catch it at the end. Sometimes I rewrite halfway through the article and get most of the way through the process before I realize this is actually crap. I can't put this out. You know? So yeah, I mean that it just happens, but I don't allow for it very much. And I'm a bit of a workaholic. So I will work myself into the ground, and that is not a healthy thing to, I believe firmly in a healthy work ethic. Okay. I'm never going to say, oh, people shouldn't have to work hard. Okay. Life is working hard. That's just the way it is. I thank God that I was born when I was, and I don't have to spend all 17 hours of the day that I am awake gathering food and building shelter just to not die, and then laying half awake through my sleeping hours, hoping a predator or another human doesn't come on me to take my stuff or kill me. So I'm very lucky in that respect. So the idea that I have to put in 8 hours a day or 9 hours a day, whatever it is, instead of, spend my entire life not dying, that is a great blessing. So I have a healthy work ethic. The problem is that I also stopped taking care of myself. And then, it's a balance, right? You have to find that balance. Because I know nobody wants to hear me talk like this, and I don't think of myself this way, okay? But if you think of yourself as a machine that produces value or something, whatever it is, your body is a machine that produces it. If you don't spend a certain amount of time maintaining that machine, its ability to do anything useful or meaningful is diminished. So if I were a factory and I ran a factory the way I ran myself, all of the machines would be smoking and cogs would be flying off in every direction and everything would just catch fire one day. The point is I have a streak of workaholism. And so what will happen is I will run myself into the ground, destroy my health to the point where I need a doctor to intervene and stop me, or something like that, because I do have chronic health problems. And then it destroys my ability to produce, lands me well behind where I need to be, and then I end up stressing myself out playing catch up. And then I just burn myself out again. So it's this constant, it is a constant unhealthy cycle that I am learning how to break my way out of. But every so often I still have a crash and burn. I'm down to like once a year now, which is way better than it used to be, but still. Anyway, better questions, or at least questions that aren't so, you know what your problem is, angry? Caladren, in a much earlier article, you mentioned that social interaction encounters should be managed like a sea otter. Could you explain that? No. I don't know. I don't know what I meant by that. I think... Right. No. I understand exactly what I was doing there. I was drawing a parallel to running a combat like a dolphin. And I was talking about how to pace social interaction encounters. Social interactions. Yeah, I gotta come back to social interaction, don't I? And I understand in the back of my head, in the back of my head, I have a vague, half-formed, nonverbal understanding of what I might have been trying to get at, the difference between, so the whole concept of running combat like a dolphin was, I got a 10-minute warning somewhere a minute ago. Okay. The whole concept of running combat like a dolphin was you dip into and out of the narration, right? You resolve things mechanically, then you narrate. Then you resolve mechanically, then you narrate. Then you resolve mechanically, then you narrate. Okay? Sea otters are friggin' playful. They're up, they're down, they spend a lot of time underwater, they just float around, everything is crazy, and then occasionally they'll just ricochet off in some direction, having a good time or you know, surface or whatever. The point is, they lounge, they're all over the place. And that's sort of what social interaction is. Because social interaction in game terms is not a constant run of turns where it's like, okay, this is what's happening. What do? You describe what you do. Okay, here's how we resolve it mechanically. And this is what happens narratively. And now this is what happens next. And what do? And you describe it. And now this is the mechanics of it. And we resolve it. Now this is what you do. This is what's happening. And then we, you know, and there's this up and down, this, you know, a sine wave pattern. Okay. A sea otter is swirling around in a circle in the narrative, underwater, swimming back and forth, looking around, because a lot of the conversation that is actually happening in a social interaction is not actually mechanical. Okay, there's a lot of back and forth before someone actually says something that is mechanical. And that is when you need to know to surface quickly and say, okay, let's resolve that quickly, and then go back to playing around in the water. I think that was ultimately the analogy that I was going to try and use. I don't even know if that made sense. In my head, it makes sense. But you're asking me to remember an analogy I didn't fully write, what, 7 years ago or something? I don't know. where were you going to go with that metaphor? You have to understand, most of these metaphors, I pull them out of my ass and then figure out why they make sense later. Okay. Stu, more upbeat question. I'm putting together an angry bestiary of sorts based on the monster table and articles you wrote a year ago. What monsters would you like to see created in the first revision? Oh, that's a tough one. See, one of the things I've always wanted to do, and one of the things that I tried to do with my own bestiary, is I like to take all the classic monsters that, you know, from D&D, you know, all your goblins and your skeletons and all the little stuff. I would just like to redesign all of them better. And I realize that's not the best, you know, that's not an exciting answer. It's just, I wish I had an angry version of the Monster Manual. Like if I could redesign the Monster Manual and just make the monsters the way I want them. That said, let's see. What are some of my favorite monsters? Huh. Why am I drawing a blank? Okay, so I tend to use undead a lot. Okay, and one of the things that bothers me about undead that I realized running for my Friday night group. So this is the three people in my Friday night group are having their first experience with Dungeons and Dragons 3.5. Okay. And one of the things that D&D 3.5 people will tell you is that undead were a bitch to deal with. Okay, in 5e, undead are basically like any other monster, except also, if you have a cleric, you have an extra way to beat them. So they're just like a monster with an extra, a monster with an extra weakness, and they're not any more powerful or any less powerful than the other monsters in the Monster Manual. In 3.5, undead do not suffer crits. They are not vulnerable to bonus damage. Some of them can't be pierced. Some of them can only be bludgeoned, depending on whether or not they have organs internal or whether they're just bones or whatever. And that's not even getting into the nasty things that undead you get once they get to any sort of a level, like fear and paralysis and level drain. And level drain is scary as hell. And then eventually you get to instant death. And that's the, undead were the worst things to fight. And that's how it should be. Okay, undead should be some of the worst monsters. Like, really, oh, whoops, 4-minute warning. Thank you. Hey, Proselus, in the future, it doesn't matter for tonight, but in the future, can we go back to you sending private messages with these warnings so that they actually pop up and can't be missed on my screen? Thank you. Because then I actually get a big notification on two different screens. Okay. Undead should be, here's the thing. Fighting normal animals should be the most mundane thing. Fighting your dire rats, your giant spiders, it's annoying, it's obnoxious, but, it's part of the job. Fighting evil humanoids should be worse, But still, it's just, yep, we're fighting orcs, we're fighting giants, we're fighting whatever. Magical beasts, they're okay. They usually have some whammy or some special thing. And usually that amounts to one weird attack and one special weakness. And then you get to undead or fey or demons and devils or elementals. And that stuff should just feel worse. You can decide what you want to be progressively worse. Personally, I feel demons and devils are the worst. Okay, they should be the worstest thing you have to deal with. Elementals, the next worstest thing. Undead should be up there, though. Undead should be terrifying to fight. When the party encounters undead, they should be like, oh, shit, not this. Can't we just, go back to goblins or whatever? Okay, so stat me up. Give me some ghouls. Oh, give me wights. I love wights, right? The semi-sentient, still with some memory of what they were capable of in life. And if you steal treasure from their tomb, they will hunt you forever, right? That's awesome. Yeah. Or wraiths. Gotta have wraiths. That's the stuff I want. I want make undead scare the pants off of players. And that will be your tribute to angry. Okay. And as far as aberrations and stuff, I don't even care. Everybody does the Cthulhu stuff, and I don't. To me, aberrations are just creepy crawlies. They're a step up for magical beasts. They're mostly just weird predators, and I'm happy with that. Obviously beholders are different, but then beholders are practically demons anyway. They should be demons. Crap! I wasn't paying attention even after I said that. Okay, give me a second to say goodbye. I'm signing off right now. Don't cut me off. All right, so the producer is telling me we're out of time. So thank you everybody for hanging out and participating in the Mostly Monthly live chat for September. I have not yet scheduled the Mostly Monthly live chat for October, but I will figure it out after we get past the non-convention, which those of you who are attending will get more updates on early next week or possibly this weekend. I've already thanked everybody for their support, their readership, their encouragement, their sympathy, their help. But I don't mind saying that again. So thank you, everyone. And I guess that's it. So, everybody have a good month, and I'll see you in spooky October.